Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Nationals Review Podcast, the official podcast for thenationalsreview.com. My name is Colm, but I cannot do this podcast alone. I need the heart and soul of the website, and he is no other than Charles Fleagle.
Here I am.
You're back.
I'm back. I didn't go anywhere, but we haven't done a podcast in a while.
You're packing for the winter meetings, I assume.
Yeah, I'm going to take a steamer ship down to Florida. Okay. and a steamer trunk. And my manservant will carry that. And, nice. Yeah, I will arrange for some free agent buys.
Wow. What are you drinking tonight is the better question.
I am a big fan of, first of all, I found out it's not Lagunitas, it's Lagunitas.
Oh, so it has a Latin flair to the name?
Yeah. Lagunitas. Oh. I love, like, one of my, probably my beer of the year for 2013 that I didn't know about before the year is Little Something Something by them.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Huge fan.
But I went to Total Wine, and whenever I go to Total Wine, it's kind of like when I was, I don't know, 10, and my parents took me to Toys R Us, and yeah. I was just spent like an hour walking around.
Right.
Total Wine has the, the loose beer bottle section, and so I just spent an hour walking around, and I picked up the Lagunitas Pils, which is a Czech-style Pilsner, and it is
pretty
good. I don't love Pilsners, and it's already getting too cold outside to drink it. It would have been good to drink on Sunday, but I'm drinking it now when it's 30 degrees out.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not a big Pilsner fan either, so I'm interested to see if I would like that.
Yeah, it's all right. It's 75 in my apartment, so I guess it's appropriate weather to drink a Pilsner.
Well, I am going a little more simpler than you. I am, once again, America's oldest brewery,
Yingling.
Yes.
A regular Yingling?
No, light, actually. Actually, it's the light version.
I like Yingling light.
I do. It's not bad. It definitely doesn't have that watery light beer taste that usually
it's definitely high on my list of light beers that I would drink. That and Amstel are probably my two favorites that have the word light in the name.
I don't ever drink Amstels because of a previous girlfriend that you remember, but we won't have to get into that story. Let's talk about the Nationals.
Amstel, she was a mess.
Yes.
Let's get right into it, man, because we haven't talked in a while.
Yes.
We were kind of depressed after the end of the season, and we did talk about the World Series. So moving on, we can already start talking about 2014 because it's almost Thanksgiving, so that means the winter meetings are coming up.
Yeah, we're in first place right now, which is great.
That's right. And going into the winter meetings, we have a new manager.
And we discussed about this, and I believe both of us said that that would be someone we would really be happy with as our coach, and here he is.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago when they hired Davey, I was looking at other people like Bobby Valentine. Good thing we didn't get him.
Boy, smart decision there.
Yeah, and I always talk about, Terry Francona because I think he's awesome. But with Williams, I'm pretty happy. I mean, you know, we talked about this before. He seems like he's got a reputation for being a little tough, but still being a player's manager. And
right.
So if you can somehow pull that off, get guys in line and still have them love you, maybe that's all dependent on how much you win. But if he can do that, I'm happy, right?
Now, would you say that Davey was also a player's manager too?
I think Davey was a player's manager, but I don't think he had the toughness to him, right? And not that he didn't have experience. I mean, he was a guy that was a Major League Baseball player, hit, 40 home runs one year, something crazy like that. He had, like, I think most people know this, but Davey Johnson had a very Brady Anderson career year, like where he was, a 7 to 12 home run hitter, and then one year he hit 43 home runs. But I mean, he had a real career. He was an all-star, several time all-star. So I'm sure they respected him, but I don't know how tough he was. I think he was very, very laid back.
So what you're saying that like Randy Knorr was more of the enforcer there?
I don't know if those teams have enforcers. Like, did Joe Torre have an enforcer? I don't think Don Mattingly was his enforcer.
No.
Mattingly is also very laid back.
He's very laid back, yeah.
I think it was just a clubhouse attitude of we're all professionals. You go out and get your work done, and I'm not going to yell at you about it afterwards. And I don't know You know, I don't know if that's the attitude that Kirk Gibson has with the Diamondbacks, and I don't know if that's the attitude that Matt Williams has. I know the I'm not going to remember who it was, but one of Kirk Gibson's managers previous, maybe it was Sparky Anderson with the Tigers. I don't think it was Dusty Baker, so maybe it was Sparky Anderson. I heard a story that was basically like, when we had a game where we committed two or three errors, which, hello, Nats, you've done that.
Right.
They would spend 3 hours the next day before the game, not taking batting practice, but doing fielding drills. And, you know, I think there's some value in that. It's not necessarily treating them like kids, but it's like, look, if you guys show me that you can field, we don't need to work on it every single day. But if you show me that you don't know what to do out there and you're going to be making mistakes, then right. That's a sign to me that we need to work on it. It's not reprimanding. It's just it's being a little tougher on them than Davey was.
Interesting.
From my amateur perspective,
right.
Not really knowing what happens in the clubhouse, right. I always thought that they needed a little bit more of a tough act this year with what happened. And obviously that wasn't Davey's personality, so he doesn't need to fake it, but.
Now, also, he is a Rizzo guy, and I think that's good because anytime you have, I think, the GM who has open communication with the manager, I think that really helps the franchise. So,
I agree. So there's plus and minuses, right? I mean, the only minus of him really being a Rizzo guy, which is a legitimate minus, is that Rizzo likes him, and so he may have hired a guy that wasn't the best guy because he was sort of clouded by, oh, I like him.
Oh,
but other than that, I mean, it's great that he has a good relationship with Rizzo.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it's Rizzo's team. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Williams will ever really be the face of the team. Now, Williams is a little bit more of a celebrity than some other managers. But, you know, like the Tigers were Jim Leland's team, you know?
True.
And so I don't think people will say, you know, you don't think of Rizzo. Or you don't think you're not going to think of Williams that way. I think you think of the Nats as Rizzo's team. So for better or worse, he better have a good relationship with him.
Right. Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to see this new fate. This new, I guess you could call it sort of like a new attitude with the team because it's going to you're bringing in a new guy.
Yeah, he's definitely like a fiery personality, right?
And right.
That could be kind of cool to see because again. A little bit opposite of Davey. Davey was great at a lot of things, but Davey didn't get particularly fired up very often.
Right. Now, interesting, though, is that Randy Knorr was basically asked to stay on.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because obviously the players really liked Knorr, and right. We talked about this. I don't think the Nats needed to hire him just because the players liked him.
Right.
But – you know, I don't – what does a bench coach do other than assist the manager and help keep the players happy?
Right.
And so if he's somebody that the players like, I think it's great that they were able to keep him.
Right. I'm just amazed that personally that Randy Knorr was okay to – because he basically lost the job to Matt Williams, and he's able to just put that behind him and just get to work. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that they had going for them in keeping him as opposed to keeping Jewett – is bench coach is often the position that, well, they manage anytime your manager gets thrown out, right? They're the right. Next guy in line usually.
Right.
And so he's still going to be looked at as the next guy in line if they decide to fire Williams in 6 months, hopefully not, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Then he would probably take over immediately, at least for the interim. And so – in terms of getting a job managing somewhere else, which I'm sure he wants to do, he doesn't want to be – probably doesn't want to be the Nats bench coach forever. He wants to be in the running for the next managerial openings. Bench coach of the Nats is a good place to be.
True.
Very whereas true. Jewett left because when Knorr didn't get hired, if Knorr had got hired, he probably would have been promoted to bench coach. Mm-hmm. And so since Knorr didn't get hired, then Jewett left to be a bench coach elsewhere.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
At least that's my sort of armchair psychologist.
Right. It makes sense, though.
But, yeah, I mean, you make the point. I like that he stayed because the players obviously like him, and they obviously feel that he has something to contribute.
Right. No, I'm happy he's there. I just I can't believe that he has enough pride and enough dignity to just put that aside and just be like, you know what? This is my job. This is my business. These players need me. I'm just going to put that behind that they passed me over. It's amazing.
No, you're right. It definitely is it says something about his personality.
Yeah, it really does.
That guy he is.
So what can we expect to see? Do we think we'll see anything off the bat from a Matt Williams team, or is this something that they're going to grow into is the bigger question here.
I have a feeling you're going to see a team that is probably a little more tighter in the field.
Interesting. Well, how many gold gloves did Matt Williams win? I feel like he won it almost every year.
He won like five. And yeah. I think that's not because his influence as a gold glover per se, but it's what I talked about before, that when they come out and they look lackadaisical on defense, he's going to drill them and he's going to get them to practice and he's going to get them to do things. You know, I think what we saw this past year was a team that was kind of expected to make the playoffs when they started. We all expected them to make the playoffs. And they didn't come out necessarily with a team that had – they didn't play with desperation for a long part of the season. And some of that stuff is overrated, but I don't think it's 0% effective. You know, I don't think it affects the game 0%. There is some effect on the game. And so I think they're going to come out fighting in April next year. That's not necessarily going to translate to wins every day, but right. Hopefully you'll see a team that looks like they don't feel like they're coasting into the playoffs. Now, maybe you would have had that either way after this year's experience, even if Davey had stayed. But
right.
I think the chances of the start that they had this year repeating are probably pretty slim.
That's good.
And considering they finished sixth place in the NL, the first team out of the playoffs – I think five games out, something like that. If you just avoid that slow start, the team was good enough to make the playoffs. Now you want them to be better than good enough to make the playoffs, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what he's like. Nobody's seen him manage other than a couple of, yeah. of Arizona Fall League games and some minor league games. So who knows?
So we talked about the winter meetings. They're upon us.
They start, I believe, December 3rd.
So why don't you explain to people out there, because, I mean, not everyone is up on this, what exactly goes on at those winter meetings, just like a general?
I actually have a friend, I think I've told this story before, a friend of mine from business school went to the winter meetings one year and actually got a job with, at the time, he got a job with the Red Sox as an intern. Basically, what he went did, he went down there and pestered people until he got to talk to somebody. They said, come and intern for us next year for free. He did. It was the old Arizona Diamondbacks GM. Who worked for it was the guy before Towers.
Right. I don't remember his name either.
I think it was Josh Burns.
I don't remember him.
He's the Padres GM right now.
Okay.
And he worked for Theo Epstein in Boston. And so Burns hired my friend.
Mm-hmm.
When Burns got hired in 2005 to be the manager GM of the Diamondbacks, he called my friend up and was basically like, okay, full-time job ready for you whenever you're ready, as long as you're ready January 1st. My friend actually, like, he was flying back and forth to New York to finish his business school classes while he was working full-time.
Wow.
But anyway, long story short, he went down there and he got involved because what they did, they literally, like, think of any conference you've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
And they go down there and they in a hotel conference room in Florida and they meet.
Right.
And they talk about, you know, they have just like at a conference, they have like sessions, hour long sessions on, I'm sure there's going to be sessions on what this instant replay stuff means.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be sessions on any other rule changes. And so it's not necessarily an event so that, you know, Rizzo can meet with Burns and trade somebody.
Right. Right.
But because they have a few hours of this every day and then they're there for 3 days, trades happen.
Right. Those are like the backroom conversations, I guess, or exactly. at the bar type of thing.
Yep. Or they're, I mean, they have like, if I remember my friend describing, I think, I can't remember if he told me this. I don't really, you know, he's sort of more of an acquaintance than a friend, but.
Right.
So I haven't talked to him in a while, but I can't remember if he told me this or if it was actually written down somewhere, but they had like a war room.
Wow.
You know, one of the hotel rooms, whether it was the GM's room or whether it was somebody else's room, they had it set up with phones and everybody there and desks out. And so like Burns would be downstairs talking to somebody mm-hmm. and be like, oh, Rizzo wants to trade us, you know, so-and-so from their farm system for our first baseman. What do we know about him? And so they'd be scouring through their documentation and what their scouting reports say and all this stuff. So mm-hmm. it's kind of cool. And like, there are really like trade rooms, kind of like they have at the trade deadline as well. They have the whole support staff there trying to make sure that they get things right if they do have a trade going. But for the most part, it really is going over the rules. But what happens there is you get trades because everybody's in the same room, and the agents and the players go down there too, and you get some amount of free agent signings, or at least the beginning of discussions of free agent signings.
Gotcha.
So it's a cool 3 days because after no baseball for basically, you know, a month and a half after the World Series, you suddenly get like a flurry of trade activities.
Right.
Right before the holidays, and then it's like the new year, and you start going, oh, 60 days till pitchers and catchers are born.
Right. Yeah, I believe Gio even tweeted out today that it's only a matter of days away until he gets the uniform back on.
I'm excited. I'm ready.
Okay, so what – the Nats, they're going to be there. Who – now, there's rumors. I'll throw out some rumors to you and tell me what you think about them. There's rumors now that they're shopping Denard Span at this meeting.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this. What do you think they need?
What do they need? Well, if you get rid of Denard Span, we need a new center fielder.
If you get rid of him.
Jacoby.
I don't think that. So I don't put center fielder high on their
list. No, I don't either.
Now, could they get a center fielder better than Span? Probably. But a lot of his value is in his defense.
Correct. Yeah.
And Rizzo loves his up-the-middle defense. And I think we still kind of underrate, you know, statistically they do a good job of it with, like, war. But I think the individual fan, like, still underrates the value of defense from, you know, your middle infielders and your center fielder.
Correct.
Now,
I agree.
The Nats happen to have pretty good defensive left fielder and right fielder, so maybe it's not as important. But, you know, I think Span played a positive role in the team, and I think he'll probably hit better this year than he did last year. So that's not high on my list.
Okay.
It's also higher on my list than left field, right field, third base, catcher, you know, top three pitchers. It certainly beats that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned actually about they have to fill out the pitching staff.
Right. A fifth starter would be number one on my list.
And they have to do something. I think they have to do something at first base.
Yes, they have to.
But before we get to that, what do you think about a starter? Because there's talk of them like trying to pull off a blockbuster deal for Scherzer or Price.
Oh, gosh. Are you serious?
Well, see, that's what I've seen, and there are in a lot of rumors. And my personal opinion is that's madness.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They have three frontline starters. They have a 1-2-3. You can quibble all you want about Strasburg. But he put up numbers this year that are as good as almost any pitcher in the league.
Right.
And unless you truly think he's going to crumble in a playoff situation or something like that, then you don't need a guy. And if you do think he's going to crumble, then you should trade him because the amount of things you can get for him are incredible.
Incredible.
If you try to treat Strasburg right now, you could get amazing things for him. And then you could go out and get Price or Scherzer as your number one and still probably end up in positive because Strasburg's under control for so many years.
Right.
So if you're one of those people that thinks, well, they need a real number one because Strasburg's not tough enough, then, like, I'd say, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
Then I'd say see Boston Red Sox 2013.
Yes. Right.
Exactly.
And I'd start offering up trades for Strasburg if that's how you feel. Now, I don't feel that way. I think what they need is a fifth starter.
Right, me too.
Or, you know, whatever, fourth or fifth. I mean, right now, Detweiler's penciled in for the fourth spot, and I guess, like, Taylor Jordan / Tanner Roark are penciled in for the fifth spot.
Yep.
You know, if those guys stay healthy all year, that's a perfectly good. That's
I'm fine with it. Right.
But Detweiler is not healthy yet.
But you have to assume that one of those guys is going to go down at some point in the season, and you need to be able to fill that spot. And that's where we don't have that.
I still haven't seen enough from Roark and Jordan to be sure.
Right, right.
So I'm in the mindset that you go out and you get a sort of innings-eating veteran in the line of what they did with Heron and Edwin Jackson the last couple of years. But Heron was a little bit of a gamble that he was so good in the past and he was so bad last year that we think if we get him, we're going to get the good guy.
Right.
And instead they could go out and get like a, I don't know, a Garza type, somebody like that who, yeah, Garza used to be a stud. Now he's just a good innings-eating pitcher.
What happened to him? It's like all of a sudden he was like a premier pitcher in this league, and then all of a sudden he just like lost it.
Yeah.
And then he's so inconsistent with his starts.
I don't know.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know
if
there's any – I've never really looked into it. Maybe some of it is going to Chicago and Texas.
So you're saying you want a guy like what Peavy did this year?
Well, Peavy – Peavy's a little different because Peavy can still be just, you know, Peavy is can be spectacular.
Now, true, but he is a number three or number four starter.
Right. I mean, this year his numbers weren't anything spectacular.
Right.
I think he was basically league average with ERA.
Right.
And he pitched 150 innings or so. That's great.
Wow, that is great. Yeah.
I mean, if that's what they're going to get, as long as they don't have to pay for it.
And he's like our age. He's like old.
Probably younger than us.
He probably is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, going back to like what you're going to get, I think at some point, if you have all of your payroll tied up in your starting pitching, my big fear is what the Braves were in the 90s.
True.
Where they had this great starting pitching that could get them to the playoffs
but they
really didn't have enough around it.
Right.
To win it. They won it once, but...
What are you saying? You're saying Sid Bream and Mark Lemke couldn't get it done?
Mark Lemke was amazing. yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, to me, they have the three pitchers that they need to make the playoffs. What they need are some guys to make sure that two out of five starts, they get something.
Right. But no, besides that, though, what about just depth on the bench? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
2 years ago, we all of a sudden all those guys were playing out of their mind off the bench. Last year, there was nothing off the bench.
Well, they definitely have to address the bench.
Yeah.
At some point.
Do we have any concerns about Ramos playing a complete season still?
Yeah, I think there is some concern about that, and you would love to see them go get a veteran catcher,
right? Because let's be honest, if Ramos can play a complete season, he's an all-star catcher.
He is. No, yeah. He's going to be – I mean,
but we've never seen it.
Probably borderline top five, definitely top 10 fantasy catcher.
Right.
He's never going to be – he's never going to have, you know, a super high batting average. His on-base is not great. He doesn't walk a lot, but – he can hit 20 home runs a year out of the catching position. I mean,
which is ridiculous. And defensively, he's definitely top five in the National League.
He's a very good defensive catcher.
Right.
And he's still so young. So, yeah, you hope he's healthy all year.
So what about big names out there that they should consider? Do you have a list at all?
Well, so if I'm going with big names, there's the one position that I worry about.
Okay.
Which is first base.
Okay.
LaRoche has one more year.
Correct.
And now there are rumors.
And has value, in my opinion.
Well, right. He does. He actually had like a 800-ish, just below maybe, like 790-something OPS.
That's
against
great.
Righties this year.
Yeah.
So even in his bad year, you know, he was certainly useful. So they have a couple of things they could do with LaRoche. They could move him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually, I saw somebody throw out, you know, what about the Pirates? Would that be a good fit? I mean, whatever they do, if they decide to move him, that's a whole different scenario. And I talked about that. Like, who would you get at first base to replace him? And some of the people, you know, there's some free agents out there that would be interesting for sure.
Right.
Napoli is probably the number one on the list.
Right.
Morales is out there.
But are you looking to get someone this year that's a stopgap or someone who's going to be there for a long-term deal?
Well, if I'm...
That's the thing.
You know, there's the dream scenario, which is probably the same dream scenario that you have.
Oh, God. Are you going to say it?
Well, it's... Obviously, forget about first base. You move Zimmerman to first base.
Yes.
You move Rendon to third.
Yes.
And you sign Robinson Cano.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
can I buy a jersey right now?
I think it would be, you know, you talk about payroll flexibility and you talk about what it's going to be like 8 years from now, blah, 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 blah.
With Harper,
they have Robinson,
oh, my God.
Cano in their lineup, the, you know,
we
one of, certainly one of the top, I don't know, five left-handed hitters in the game right now who happens to also play second base.
God.
He's incredible.
Incredible.
His numbers. Do you know what his numbers are for the last? Let's.
I don't know what his numbers are, but I do know the number of the price of the watch Jay-Z bought him yesterday.
Well, okay. So over the last 5 years with New York, .314 batting average, .369 on base, .530 slugging.
God. How many home runs in that time?
142 home runs. Averaging 28 a year.
At second base.
Won a couple gold gloves.
Does anyone even come close at second base at those numbers? I mean, Chase Utley in his prime,
Pedroia,
I guess.
You could argue Pedroia has been as valuable. You know, I think they alternate years, which who's more valuable.
Right.
Pedroia walks more, so he gets on base a bit more, but he doesn't, you know.
Right.
Despite the laser show, he doesn't have the power that Cano has. And Pedroia might be a little bit of a better fielder, but I don't know. Cano's, I think the past 4 years... The two of them have won all of the gold gloves, two and two. So,
wow.
So anyway, Cano would be. I mean, come on.
Come on. I'd pay anything for that. Could you imagine? You would have Harper and Cano in the same lineup, probably hitting in front and behind each other.
I think Williams talked about how he'd like Harper to bat, not necessarily in the middle of the lineup, so he wouldn't be afraid to use his speed, but somewhere in that lineup, maybe. Cano third, Zimmerman fourth, Harper fifth,
yeah.
Desmond sixth, I don't know, whatever it is. And then Span and Worth leading off.
Good God. All right, well, let's talk about real. Let's go.
Span at the bottom of the lineup, go Worth.
Let's come back to Earth.
Then Zimmerman, then Cano. How about that as your first?
Let's come back to Earth. That would be ultimate, and believe me, we would go nuts if that happened.
Well, I will say in the... In the ESPN chat today with Dave Schoenfeld, who does the sweet spot, somebody asked him where, you know, is there anybody else that might be bidding on Cano? And he did name the Nationals.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely in it. It's them, the Mets, I believe.
I don't think the Mets are real. I think the
really?
Mets are.
You think he's using them as a ploy to get money from the
I
Yankees?
I think he said, can we talk? And the Mets said, all right, this will cost us a lunch. Like, fine. But, yeah, I think he's just using him so that he's met with somebody else.
Interesting.
I also think that you have to understand who Cano's agent is right now.
Oh, God.
If it was Boris, I would think he's probably more likely to go to the Yankees than he is now. Mm-hmm. I still think he's going to end up with the Yankees.
Me too. Yeah.
But I think Boris would just – You know, he's so good at what he does that he would just make sure the Yankees paid a lot.
Right.
With Jay-Z.
Sorry, I just can't take that seriously.
I think that he has less leverage. And the reason I do is because Jay-Z is like a New York icon, right?
Right.
He's a face of that city, and he's a huge Yankees fan. And
right.
I just can't. I know he's a really smart businessman. I'm not, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to being a great agent, but he's not a dumb guy.
Right.
But I can't imagine him letting Cano leave New York.
Yeah, no way. Doesn't he also own the basketball team there?
I think he used to own a piece of the Nets, although he may have sold it back after he started being an agent. I don't know. But... Yeah, I mean, okay, so...
Does Master P work for him, too? Is that what...
Master P is the... I think I tweeted that out a couple...
You did. I saw it. That's why I said it.
Like, Jay-Z's like the good, the talented version of Master P.
Right. So let's be realistic.
The,
yeah.
Okay. There's a couple things you could do.
Okay.
One is if they actually trade LaRoche, there's some guys they could get. One of the ones that I'm actually really interested in is Corey Hart.
Oh, love Corey Hart. The only thing is injuries is my problem with him.
He was out all last year.
Yeah.
And he didn't play a lot of first base. He was a right fielder. But he probably wants to play first base
now. He's huge, too.
And he was a really good hitter.
Yeah, he was. Well, look at who he was hitting behind in that lineup. I mean, come on. He had Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder.
I don't care. That's a good hitter.
Okay.
That's a guy that's going to slug 500.
True. I would be totally happy with that.
I think he would be, if he was healthy, he would be an incredible addition to the team.
Okay. I'm on board with that.
He's a righty, though. And if you're losing LaRoche, you're only going to have one big hitting lefty in your lineup in Harper.
Oh, God. That's not good.
Now, what about somebody that's never played first base but might be good on a one-year deal? Carlos Beltran.
Are you kidding me? I love one of the best postseason hitters of all time.
He's going to be 37 next year, but he was awesome this year with St. Louis.
He was. He really
was. He had I think he hit like 280 with like a 350, 340 on base.
And the Cardinals really don't need him, especially now that they have like Matt Adams and Alan Craig. I mean.
Yeah, so Matt Adams was somebody I meant. So I threw out a couple of ideas for like potential trade targets if they wanted to get rid of. They wanted to get a first baseman. So Matt Adams would be somebody that.
I would love that. I think that guy's got a lot of up or potential.
Well, he's only 24.
Yeah, exactly.
They got Alan Craig and David Fries as their corner infielders. Like, Adams doesn't have a place anymore.
Right.
He basically played this year because...
the DH.
Well, no, he played because Craig got hurt. But that's where... Like, we wouldn't have even known who Matt Adams was if Craig wasn't hurt all September.
Right.
And then he came back... Craig came back for the World Series.
And that's where I was like... It fell in love with Matt Adams during the postseason where I saw him play.
Right. And he wouldn't have played if Craig was healthy. So he might have played in the World Series, but that would have been it. So, you know, maybe they'd be willing to trade him. Another guy that I actually thought might be able to be grabbed was Victor Martinez. Because,
really?
Well, here's what I thought.
Well, he has never returned to the person he was after he left, Cleveland?
Right, but he hit well this year, right? He hit 300 this year.
Oh, he did. Wow.
And he had a good amount of power. It wasn't like crazy power, but I'll tell you exactly what he hit this year with the Tigers. He hit in six, so he had a full season, 159 games. He hit 301, 355 on base with 430 slugging. So not a ton of power.
Right.
But 14 home runs, walked 54 times, 83 RBIs. Decent season, not a super power hitter, but I don't know. I think he could hit five home runs less than LaRoche and have a 20-point higher on-base percentage.
Hmm.
So the reason I named him was I was just thinking of guys, and look, the Tigers have three first basemen.
Right.
They got Fielder, they got Cabrera, and they got Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe after this year they're like, well, we want a little bit more defense. Well, you're not going to get rid of Fielder because his contract is just impossible.
Right.
You're not going to get rid of Cabrera because he's basically the best hitter in baseball.
Right.
So if you want to get rid of one of them, Martinez has like one more year on his contract this year. And so they're not even going to have him after next year probably. Maybe they'd be interested in trading him a year early.
Wow. I'd be totally for that. What about previous Nationals favorite? Michael Morse.
Mike Morse?
Yeah. Free agent.
Well, you know... I think Morse would be more – so the other thing we talked about is that LaRoche really did pretty well, not all-star level well, but pretty well against righties this year.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
So maybe what they should do is sign a bench guy, a quote-unquote bench player, so as not to, you know, embarrass LaRoche or cause any problems, but say, hey, we're gonna go out and really bolster our bench with a right-handed power hitter. We think we need one. And then, oh, look who we're facing, a tough lefty. LaRoche, why don't you sit and we'll put in Mike Morse today. You know, somebody like that.
Right,
and there's names out there of guys that when you think about, I mean, when you go back in history and think about baseball, you're like, yeah, teams do have guys like this on their bench.
Is that like a Travis Hafner?
Yeah, but like with the guys that are out there now are like Mark Reynolds and Kevin Youkilis, and I don't know that Konerko is not going to retire if he doesn't play for the White Sox. But if the White Sox don't want to sign him, even Konerko can play pretty
well.
He's
a great hitter.
Against lefties only. I mean, there are some guys that I think are out there that are possible. Now, Reynolds and Youkilis may – I think Reynolds may want to get a full-time job. I don't know if Youkilis realistically thinks that he's going to be somebody starting anything. And so you might be able to get Youkilis.
Wow.
Who could also fill in at third base for when Zimmerman inevitably pulls his hamstring and is out for 2 weeks.
How about – I have another free agent for you. How about someone like a Justin Morneau?
Morneau's another guy that I think is definitely possible on the – you know, he may be another one that thinks he can get a full-time job, but I don't know that
I don't.
Can.
I think that's over for him.
But, I mean, to me, if they don't trade LaRoche for something good –
mm-hmm.
This is the next best thing. And, you know, you can get a guy like Youkilis or Reynolds for 1 or 2 years and just be like, look, we're going to use you anytime we need somebody off the bench. And you're going to start against lefties. You're going to get 200 at-bats a year.
I like that. It's like a running back committee for the NFL.
It's a classic platoon that they just don't do anymore because everybody feels the need to carry, you know, 13 pitchers. But if your platoon partner with LaRoche is somebody like Youkilis or Reynolds that you're also like, yeah, he's also our number one guy off the bench anytime it's late.
Anytime, right. We need a pitch.
Then you're like, well, we need that guy anyway. I mean, he'll basically be like what Trad Tracy was the last couple of years, only –
only he's better.
And you have to pay him more, but I don't know that those guys would be averse to doing something like that. And I think you know, suddenly LaRoche becomes like you add LaRoche and Youkilis and you have them play when they should. And suddenly you have, instead of a 330 on base guy, you have like a 350 on base guy.
Right.
And suddenly instead of LaRoche hitting 17 to 20 home runs a year, you have the two of them hitting 25 or 26 home runs a year.
Wow.
As a platoon player. So I don't know. I think there's something that should be done there if LaRoche stays.
Mm-hmm.
And LaRoche still has value. I mean, I don't think they need to dump him in a fire sale. If somebody really wants him, you know, that's fine, but then they got to figure out what the heck they're doing at first base.
Right.
Whether it's moving Zimmerman and Rendon and finding somebody else to play second, or, I mean, in a perfect world, Espinoza becomes the old Espinoza, but you can't depend on that at all going into the season.
Mm-hmm.
That can only be a nice surprise that happens later.
Right.
You absolutely cannot count on Espinoza to be anything but the horrible player he was this year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe they could go out if they trade LaRoche and get a middle infielder, but other than Cano, I don't know who's out there that you'd be happy with, right?
Exactly. Maybe it's very thin. Yeah.
Steven Drew could play second base.
Mm.
I mean, he had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
With the Red Sox. I don't know. Johnny Peralta. He can still hit, and his, you know, he's been a really good underrated player for the Tigers the last few years. He could, you could put him at second base. He's a good enough defensive player to play second.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Kelly Johnson's another guy that I had named. You could try trading for – how about – here's a guy you could try trading for.
Who?
To play second base, who's getting paid a lot, maybe more than his team wants to pay him. Ben Zobrist.
Oh, interesting. And he plays multiple positions, doesn't he?
He can play everywhere.
Yeah.
He can sell beer in the stands if you need him to. Okay, a couple other guys that I named, right?
Okay.
So I actually wrote about this way back, right, I think it was actually when the season ended. So I have an article called Replacing LaRoche with a Middle Infielder.
Okay.
And it's just the concept that if you do get something for LaRoche and you look around and you're like, there's no first baseman to replace him, you can do that Zimmerman move this year and find a middle infielder. So there are a couple trades that I named. One would be Zobrist, and I do not know enough to try and make up who they would actually need to trade for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to embarrass myself by naming some group of players and everybody's like, yeah, in your dreams.
Right, right.
But what about somebody that's getting paid a ton of money for the next few years on a really bad team that maybe doesn't want to pay him anymore? Jose Reyes.
Interesting. Wow. I mean,
it's just a thought, right?
Yeah.
It's a contract that's, I think he's still owed like $80 million.
I mean, he was one of the best players in baseball a couple years ago.
You know, he hit, let me see, I have 296, 353, 427 this year with 15 stolen bases.
Wow.
So he gets on base is what's important. He still has some pop. He gets on base. He steals. And he hasn't been a great fielder the last few seasons, so you put him at second. Or how about the Angels can't afford their team anymore, but yeah, they have all these guys that they have locked up. People are talking about how they have to get rid of either Trumbo or Kendrick, either one of them.
Oh, wow. I would love either of them, yeah.
Try and get Trumbo to play first.
Trumbo play first, yeah.
Your second baseman.
That would be – that is a great situation right there. I like that a lot.
So –
so there's a lot we could do, pretty much. It's just
right.
All depends.
I mean, there's a lot you can do. Now, my personal, and I've said this before, mm-hmm, you got to be real careful with what you do moving Zimmerman to first, because we've talked about this.
Yeah.
He becomes an average first baseman instead of an all-star third baseman.
Right.
Now, I actually got into a little conversation with somebody on Baseball Prospectus about this. Craig Goldstein wrote an article basically talking about moves that the NL East needs to make.
Right.
And, you know, he talked about the Nats, and I said, you know, what about platooning? And we talked about that. And I said, well, one of my worries is basically moving Zimmerman to first and getting, you know, not so good first base potential. But what he basically said was, you know, don't think of it like, oh, you're having a subpar first baseman. It's think of it like, what's the best lineup for your team, right?
Right.
And so sometimes I get caught up in the minutia of like him being a star versus him being the average first baseman. But it's really, are the Nationals a better team, defense included, if Rendon is at third, somebody else is at second, and Zimmerman is at first?
Yeah, you're right.
And it's possible. Maybe right. With Kendrick, that's possible. I don't
right.
know. Kendrick,
yeah, that
is
second
right.
baseman is the key, because right now we have the right pieces that the machine is running. Is it going to mess it up? Yeah.
And I love Rendon.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the next jersey I'm going to buy.
Yeah.
But I have to be honest, I'm not convinced he's an average second baseman yet in terms of
fielding.
I think his hitting's great, right? He didn't have a great year hitting, but you could see the way that guy approached the plate. You could see the way he hit. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him.
But I don't want his defense to cost us, and I think he's a good fielder. I can't really watch 20 Nats games and go, oh, yeah, that guy's got really good range and really doesn't. That's more, you know, I have to see the statistics, and you have to see what scouting reports say, and I just don't know yet about him.
Right.
So if they know something I don't, and they're going, yeah, Rendon did a good job, but he's really not a great second baseman, then maybe it makes sense to go get a second baseman and shift everybody over now.
Can we get some Japanese first baseman?
What's that?
Can we get some Japanese first baseman to come?
There was news today, actually.
Yeah, Tanaka.
No, about a Cuban defector.
Oh, fine.
Which his name is Esribel Arabarwena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. I said it. But he started at shortstop for Cuba in the WBC, and he's supposedly like the most incredible fielder in the world.
Fine.
Besides, you know, Andrelton Simmons, I guess. But, you know, do the Nats want to sign him, put him at short?
Yeah, that's...
Desmond the second, move Rendon the third, move Zimmerman the first. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe they're looking at him and going, he's that good. I just don't know. But, I mean, I think that they have to do something. I mean, this all boils down to what we're talking about before. They have to do something at first base.
Right.
I'm okay with them finding a platoon partner, but I'm not okay with it being Tyler Moore yet.
Right.
Because he didn't show me this year that he was the Tyler Moore that could hit 20 home runs in a platoon role.
No, Tyler Moore is a guy when one of our outfielders needs to sit, he comes in and he plays. That's my feeling on him.
I worry about him getting 200 to 300 plate appearances a year.
Yeah.
It did not work out this year.
Yeah, it did not. No.
And if what happened this year was LaRoche was bad and they didn't have anybody else to put in because Moore sucked. Mm-hmm. And so I fear that with getting somebody again like Morse. I want them to get somebody that's good, that is probably getting a little bit older and is sort of relegated to mostly hitting lefties. Guys like Reynolds and Euculus may be those guys.
Right.
Or trade LaRoche and get somebody to play first or somebody to play second. I'm okay with either of those scenarios. The one scenario I'm not okay with is going into the season thinking LaRoche is going to get 650 plate appearances again.
Hmm. Well, let's hope that there's some backroom dealings in these winter meetings.
Let's hope they just get Cano. That would be so amazing.
Oh, God.
It's never going to happen.
The amount of tweets that you're gonna do from at the Nationals Review, if that happens.
I can't even. I don't even think I'll be able to go on my computer for several days.
Wow.
I'll just be curled up in the corner, so happy.
Well, do we have anything else to discuss, or should we close it out?
I think it's time to take a break and hopefully come back maybe after the winter meetings and some moves have been made.
Yes. That is exactly what we should do. But in the meantime, you should definitely head to thenationalsreview.com where you can read all of these amazing posts about the Nationals. You can follow me on Twitter at Culmination.
You can follow me at Nationals Review.
And we're on iTunes, so basically go there and subscribe. Write us some comments on there. We'd really appreciate it. And give us some feedback on Twitter. Charlie is great at the Nationals Review on Twitter on responding to you, or if you give him like random scenarios or ask him about players, he's great about debating that with you, which I notice all the time, which is great.
I love it. I love talking to people on Twitter. That's why I'm on Twitter, to talk to people about baseball.
That's right. All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you at the park.
See you at the park.